Rainmaker FM is brought to you by Digital Commerce Institute. Do you want to build the business of your dreams without squandering time and money, stumbling around to find the right path, or making unnecessary mistakes? The market is ready and waiting for you, but that doesn't mean it's gotten any easier. Digital Commerce Institute is here to change that. Go to digitalcommerce.com and get the training, education, and community you need to start building your digital business the right way. That's digitalcommerce.com.
Greetings, super friends. My name is Sonia Simone, and these are the confessions of a pink-haired marketer. For those of you who might not know me yet, I'm a co-founder and the chief content officer for Rainmaker Digital. I'm also a champion of running your business and your life according to your own rules. As long as you don't lie and you don't hurt people, this podcast is your official pink permission slip to run your business or your career exactly the way you think you should. So today is Leap Year Day, and that is cool. And it's also Q&A Day, and that's cool as well. So I've collected some of your questions from both Twitter and from user comments and questions on pinkhairedmarketer.fm. And by the way, you are very welcome to leave your own question or your own suggestion or comment for a future episode. I would love to hear your reaction and what you're thinking about. So here are our questions for today. First one is from David Villalva. He left a comment on the metrics and benchmarks episode over at pinkhairedmarketer.fm. And here's his question. I keep hearing great entrepreneurs talking about how you don't go where the puck is, you go where it's going. I keep thinking about this in my little platform I'm steadily building. I see online courses everywhere, and I have yet to launch an MVP, that's minimum viable product. This year, I will, though. Anyway, I'm trying to think bigger and farther down the road of time. So I keep asking myself what signs I should be looking for, or what trends, or which great entrepreneurs to watch. Bottom line, what is a good and healthy way to analyze everything being done out there so I can try and go where the puck is going? And that's an awesome question. Of course, the original quote comes from Wayne Gretzky, who played hockey rather well. I skate to where the puck is going to be, not to where it has been. So I have thoughts on this. First and foremost, and this is a strong personal belief of mine, and I think that the evidence supports me on this, which is essentially futurism is a scam. So futurists and trend analysts and people who write, you know, reports about what's going to happen in the future of business are more sophisticated versions of the Psychic Friends Network. Not more sophisticated in terms of process, but more sophisticated in terms of, frankly, of marketing. So I know that's kind of a big statement, but really, truly, predictions and professional predictions have a lousy, lousy track record. We all like them. You know, it's probably kind of baked into our DNA that we would love to know what's going to happen next. Of course we will. But you want to take all predictions, including your own, with a really significantly large grain of salt. Now, the trick is you don't want to take it with such a large grain of salt that you are paralyzed by inaction because you're not confident about the environment. So that's where my suggestions are going to focus today, on how to observe your environment so that you can make an informed decision about how you're going to move forward. Now, the first thing I really recommend is listening, social media listening, and various kinds of listening to your audience. And just completely as it happens, that's what I have scheduled to talk about this coming Thursday, March 3rd, on the Copyblogger FM podcast. So rather than, you know, spew out every single detail today, I'm going to just point you to that Thursday. Look for an entire episode on that at the Copyblogger FM show. Essentially, though, everything good comes from the audience that you serve, and your business vision is part of what comes from that audience. And David mentioned the MVP, the minimum viable product. And where I think a lot of people get a little off track with it is the MVP is not a tool to bring revenue into your business. Although, of course, if it does, this is a good thing. Revenue is good. The MVP is a learning and listening tool more than it is a revenue generating tool. The minimum viable product is something that you launch. And my definition of that is the smallest thing that you can launch that will create a meaningful result for your customer. So you launch that smallest thing because it's a way to gauge what people actually would like to buy, what they want to buy. Not what they need, which you'd be able to figure out pretty well through analysis, but what they want. And the only true way to know what people want is to offer them something and to see if they bite or not when they're investing real dollars, not, you know, imaginary dollars in a focus group. So we are in a funny time. We are in this odd period of unprecedented change, an unprecedented rate of acceleration of change. And it's easy to not see that human nature actually changes very little. So we do have some things that do change. For example, our attention span is getting rewired. We have some changes in the wiring of the brain that come from the way we're taking in information. Just like there were changes to the wiring of the brain that happened when books became commonplace. You know, the structures of the brain look a bit different in someone who reads than they do in a person who is not coming out of a culture, a literate culture. So there are a few things like that, but for the most part, the heart wants what the heart wants. And that stays surprisingly steady through the ages. So here's what I suggest you do look for. Try and keep your eye out for how your people want you to deliver the thing that they want. You know, what is the package going to look like? How's it going to be wrapped up? How's it going to be presented? What are the explanations that are resonating with them today? What are the media and the platforms that are working well for them right now? Where are they hanging out, in other words? And in your business and with your minimum viable product and with everything in your business, what's working? Now, if you can figure out why, that's great, but it's optional. Observe what's working and do more of that. The counter to that, the mirror image, looks a little different. What's not working, try to figure out why, and do less of what's not working. And here's what I mean in the mirror image looks a little different. There's a little bit more risk in what's not working because it's a real opportunity to throw the baby out with the bathwater. In other words, to discard the good thing that is working because there's some element of it that's not right yet. So when you are doing more of what's working and less of what's not working, the not working part, it's more important to understand why. Maybe it was the right offer, but it was the wrong words, or vice versa. The words were great, but the offer just wasn't something they wanted. Might have been on the wrong platform. Your design might have been off. The offer might have been too confusing, or the timing might not have been good. Now, the most important point with this whole puck business is that you can delay getting into the game forever because you're trying to figure out where the puck is going to go. And the way you pick that instinct up is by playing far more than you ever are going to on the sidelines. So that's the awesome thing about that minimum viable product idea, launching the tiniest thing you can that still will get a meaningful result for your customer. Because when you get in there and get your hands dirty, all of a sudden, you see all kinds of things that were hidden from you before. So observation, this kind of observation looks like magic when you're doing it right. So really get in the game, start looking at what's, you know, what's happening, what's not happening. And this is going to sound like total sucking up, but it really is true. I will say I have benefited greatly from watching what Brian Clark, who founded my company and who's our CEO, he is a person who often has a pretty good ability to observe trends, not because he's predicting the future, but just because he's very observant about what's going on right now. So, you know, check out his podcasts, read what he has to say, take a look at what he's saying over at Digital Commerce Institute. He really, he is a person who, just apart from my business relationship with him, I found that he's a very good observer, and he doesn't start talking until he's really thought it through, which is kind of a nice quality. All right, second question. This comes from one of our Rainmaker publishers who's in Brazil, which I think is totally cool. And he asked me this on Twitter. And his name is Daniel Schofi. I might have mangled it slightly, but did my best. Daniel's question is, I would love to hear more about Cornerstone content. I know we had the challenge, but I couldn't make it because we just had that big Cornerstone content challenge. But if you missed it, that's totally okay. We can start from here. So cornerstone content, as the name implies, is the foundation that content strategy rests on. It's the keystone content. It's the content that everything else is built on top of. Now, one thing to keep in mind, unlike, you know, a literal cornerstone of a building, you can keep adding to your cornerstone content over time, and you should. And you can also update it so that it's always current, and you should. So one way that the metaphor might lead you astray is to think that you do it once and you never touch it again. That's not a best practice. You can often get away with it, but it is not the best practice. Now, just like I was talking about with David's question earlier, the specifics of what your cornerstone is going to look like are going to depend on your audience. And specifically, they're going to depend on finding the intersection between what you can teach well and what they want to learn. So a couple of points to keep in mind when you are creating that cornerstone content, you know, the core content on your site that you're going to refer back to again and again. The first principle is that cornerstone content nearly always teaches something, and it pairs meaning and fascination. We talk about this all the time on Copyblogger. In other words, it's got meaning, so it's relevant. It's teaching them something they want to know. It's useful. Usefulness and fascination is often the way that I combine those two. And it's doing that with an interesting voice. It's using any of your skill and any of your art as a content creator. You know, whether you're a wonderful writer or you make great videos or you have an engaging speaking voice, or you tell great stories, or you produce great images. Whatever your talents you can bring to make it engaging and fascinating and entertaining and exciting, those will all help. So your cornerstone wants to pair the relevance with the interest and the excitement. Another thing you want to think about with cornerstone is thinking about what the audience needs to know before they can move forward in the direction of what they want. So what are the next steps for them to get the thing they want? And that, of course, means you have to know what they want. It's an important part of serving an audience to understand what it is that interests them, that intrigues them. What do they need to know more about? You also want to include what they need to be able to move forward with you specifically. So, for example, a fitness trainer who emphasizes strength training, that person's audience needs to know what are the benefits of strength training and what are the benefits of strength training for that audience. For example, very often you'll talk differently if you are a strength trainer for women versus for men. You know, the guys might want like major guns, right? They want massive old biceps. Increasingly, the ladies would like big guns as well, but they might have some concerns. They're worried about getting too bulky. It really depends on your audience. What are the benefits of what you do? How are the benefits going to get them the thing that they want? And often this includes how are they going to start to get some of those benefits as quickly as they can. Cornerstone content will tend to focus on the quick wins, the low-hanging fruit, as the consultants like to say. And then finally, if you've done any keyword research as an SEO exercise, a search engine optimization exercise, that's going to inform your plan for improving and expanding your cornerstone content. A lot of web publishers have a mistaken idea that your search strategy is different from your customer strategy. And that really only works if the Google search robots have been given credit cards and they can buy your stuff, right? Everything you do for search has to have an intelligent business strategy, or it just doesn't make a lot of sense. But keywords are the expression of real human beings looking for information on the web about what you do. So it's not an artificial strategy, and sometimes people think it is. But you can use that keyword research to help you create a plan or a map for what kind of material you're going to cover with your cornerstone. And one starting point you can work with if you like, or an exercise, even if you already have like a really good foundation in place, but you want to strengthen it. I think Marcus Sheridan had a great exercise. He's talked about it many times, in talks. He's talked about it on the web, which is to take every question that you've ever fielded about your topic, or if you have a support team, all the questions that they have fielded. And of course, we often find these in our email box. And use every one of those questions for a piece of short, useful, focused content, like a blog post, for example. Now, it might be a paragraph long. It might be two sentences long. For most of us, this is not going to be your entire content strategy. It will often fail somewhat on the fascinating angle. You know, these are just very straightforward, factual kinds of answers. It depends on how good your voice is. If you have a really strong personality in your podcasts or your writing or your videos, you know, that can bump you over into fascinating. It's also really easy for your competitors to copy, again, especially if your voice isn't strong. What I love about this exercise, and I think that Marcus really hit on something powerful with it, is it makes a wonderful start, because overcoming that inertia is often half the battle. Once you start diving into real questions, then your creativity starts to flow, and then you start to think about more interesting ways to answer these questions. So the other component of cornerstone content that people always want to know is, should it be short? Should it be long? Should it be an infographic? Should it be a video? Should it be a text? Should it be a podcast? And the answer to all of those is, it should be useful to your audience in the format or the formats they want. And from there, you can always tweak it just a bit if you need to optimize it for sharing on social platforms, or to optimize it for SEO, or to optimize it for wherever that particular piece of content seems to merit. And if you happen to be in a podcast listening mood today, you might listen to my podcast with Andy Crestedina at Orbit Media. Every piece, that's at Copyblogger FM, at the Copyblogger FM show, every piece of content he creates with an optimization strategy in mind before he creates the content. So he knows how he's going to promote it before he creates it. Because, and one of the things he talked about in that episode, you know, some topics are really good for search. Some topics are really great for social sharing. He talks a little bit about how he makes those decisions in that episode if you want to dive more into that. So cornerstone is not necessarily going to be text. It's not necessarily going to be video. It's going to be what's useful to your audience. But one awesome thing that you can do is create it in, you know, whatever your power format is first. So on Copyblogger, that's text for the most part, because we're basically a crew of writers. A lot of content creators will start with podcast content first, because audio is a little faster for many people to create. And because we have this massive podcasting network on Rainmaker FM, some of us, myself included, are starting to go a bit more in that direction as well. We might play with the idea first as a podcast and then develop it into other formats. And those other formats can be taking a podcast episode and turning it into a polished text article, or turning it into a video, or turning it into an infographic, or turning it into a premium ebook that you might sell on your site for a few dollars, or that you might give away as an incentive for joining your email list, or you might crack it open and turn it into an email autoresponder series. So once the cornerstone is there, you can turn around and repurpose it into all kinds of things and serve more people, you know, give more people more things in the format that they want to get it, to pick it up. And that's going to lead us into the third question for today. And this is from Marie-Hélène Di Benedetto. She lives in Belgium. And she asked me a question on Twitter. And thank you. This is, I believe, the second or third time that Marie-Hélène has submitted a question to me. I really appreciate your thoughtful questions. Her question is, how do you find a new angle to write your blog posts from when so much has been written about everything already? This is an excellent question. It is really one that we face a lot at Copyblogger because we are a more mature publication. We have talked quite a bit about things in the past. To me, it's an evolution. You know, this is the next stage of thinking beyond that cornerstone content question. So it's not just what to cover, but then how to cover it in a way that's going to feel fresh and interesting. And I think that there are two faces of this question. One face is when your industry has talked about a particular topic so much already. So for example, Copyblogger has been a content marketing blog since the first post. We didn't know that. Brian didn't know that. Their content marketing wasn't a term being used when he founded the blog, but that's what he actually was writing about. And then over the years, content marketing became this big buzzword, and all of a sudden, everybody's talking about content marketing, and everybody is going on and on and on about kind of the same things. And so there's a real challenge there. How do we approach it in a way that's interesting when so many people are talking about it? And then the other face, which is also something that we face, is when you know, as a publisher, have written and talked about it so much already, and you need to stay fresh, and you need to stay creative, and maybe you're even getting a little creatively burned out thinking about, you know, can I come up with a new and fresh way to talk about the call to action? So I'm going to try and give you some thoughts on both of those. First and foremost, and I mentioned this earlier, the key differentiator in those much talked about topics, in my experience, really is voice. So I'll give you an example. I was just sitting in just a couple hours ago on a webinar about one element of content marketing. And it was delivered by someone who's, in one way, he's a competitor, but he has a very different audience than I do. And so in real life, he's really not much of a competitor just because he has such a different customer. So he's talking about a lot of the things Copyblogger's been talking about for a couple of years now. But he's speaking to different people and he uses a really different voice. And the language that he uses would probably make, like, you, for example, not excited, not engaged. He uses a lot of very aggressive language, militaristic or violent kind of terminology. So he has one terminology, and I'm skewing this a little bit here. And by the way, I'm not putting this person down. He's very smart. I've learned a lot from him. I've been following his work for many years. So it's not like he's doing something bad and I'm doing something good. He's just doing something in a different voice. So he gave an example that I found kind of raised my eyebrow a tiny bit. And again, I'm changing the metaphor a little bit, but he talked about, you know, trapping your prospect's leg in a bear trap. But today we're going to do that in like a warm and fuzzy, comfortable way, you know. So it was very, it's very much a mixed metaphor. And, you know, it may be that for his audience, that tension is actually very dramatically interesting. So he's translating what we do in the content marketing online marketing space. He's translating it for his people. I'm translating it for my people. I'm, you know, talking about it in metaphors and imagery that I think works for you and it works for me and who I am as a person. And you are going to translate your key messages for your people. You're going to look for your metaphors, your images, you know, your colors, if you will, that you are going to paint your picture in. So we can have 1,000 different watercolors of a meadow, and they're all going to work for a different viewer because we all have something different to communicate. So another tactical way you can approach this is what I talked about just a couple of minutes ago, repurposing. So could you repackage existing work and polish it for a new audience? If there's a lot of video, but there are no podcasts, maybe that's something to explore. If you're seeing a lot of infographics, but there aren't any really high-quality ebooks, maybe that's the right direction for you. So you can do this with your own work that you've already created on your site. And you can also go out and find the gaps in the existing content and then create something new and creative that fills those gaps. And one thing that is kind of wonderful about the environment of change that we live in is that new gaps are appearing all the time. So you can keep your eyes open for that and keep your eyes open for things that haven't been done before because the environment changed and a new gap appeared. And then the final one that I'll leave you with is what I call the Seth Godin technique. It's just something that I learned from watching what he does on his blog and emulated it unconsciously at first and then consciously. But you can do this endlessly without copying because it's an approach rather than, you know, a blueprint or a formula. And that approach is that you look around in your world, online and offline, and you keep your eyes open for things that come across your path that illustrate your key points. So, you know, a sign in a coffee shop or an ad that you see or a package on a product or something that your funny little nephew does or something in current events, something in pop culture, something in industry news. And you look around for things that reflect some key belief that you have that you've already expressed with your cornerstone content. So once you start looking for them, you start finding them and you start creating, you know, maybe there's a role to write a post about how the Beyoncé Super Bowl performance illustrated my point about X. And then you link that current post back to your cornerstone content. And your cornerstone content is where you really spell out X and you really explain what X is and what it means and how it affects your audience. And then one final quick point that I'll make is that depending on your business and where you are, this can be a good time also to bring in a larger writing team, specifically when you are a little bit burned out on how you write about your topic. Now, you can go with that Seth Godin technique for a long time. You may be able to go for the life of your business with that, but it can also be a good time to bring in maybe some other voices, some freelance content creators who are still enthusiastic about a topic that you might just be, you know, you might need a bit of a break on yourself. And that circles us back to an important point about content strategy and about your cornerstone content, which is they really do evolve. You know, you might change your mind about one of your cornerstone points, which is awesome and amazing. So leave yourself open to that. You know, platforms come and go, media come and go, truisms sometimes come and go. So part of staying creatively fresh is staying awake to those new ways of thinking about your tried and true topics. So I think that wraps it up for today's Q&A. I really want to thank our three questioners today for giving me questions that, you know, I could have maybe a little more comprehensive answer for you. So I just so much appreciate it. If you would like to leave a question or you would like to give me ideas for future episodes or let me know what you like, what you don't like, the place to go is pinkhairedmarketer.fm and the magic of the internet will whisk you to the complete archive, all the archives for the show, all the resources, any links, any good free stuff I can find for you. Love to see you there, of course. You can also catch up with me easily on Twitter. I'm at Sonia Simone, and I tend to hang out there a bit most days, and I'm pretty easy to get hold of there. So I want to thank you, as always, for your time and attention. I really cherish it, and I really thank you for the wonderful community that you provide me every day. I learn so much from you. Thank you so much. Take care and see you next time.